Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport. Thank you for coming back to the Inside Lacrosse Podcast. I am Terry Foy, joined today by a trifecta of leaders of the Long Island Sting, one of the most unique clubs in all of club lacrosse. And as we stare down the summer of 2023, I'm a year ahead of myself. The summer of 2022, we are getting ready by talking to Ken Miller, Kevin Donovan, and Mark Lassini, who are gearing up themselves for a great summer. Fellas, thanks so much for joining us. Looking forward to the conversation.
Our pleasure. Thanks for having us on, man.
Excited to be here.
To begin, you know, as I mentioned, the Sting have been a mainstay in the club lacrosse landscape, but at the same time are pretty unique. You're in your 27th season. Tell us a little bit about the organization and what makes you guys distinct from some of the other clubs that, you know, have kind of dominated the landscape, so to speak.
Well, I think the thing that makes us unique is, first of all, we've been around a long time, like you alluded to. And this will be our 28th season, I think. And, you know, I originally started this thing to spend more time with my son and, you know, get him better competition going down to Maryland, where, you know, the better club teams existed, or informally, or play some of the schools down there. And, you know, in effect, I caught a tiger by the tail, because when we got the club team going, you know, we were pretty much the only game in town, and the best players on Long Island migrated to us. Most of those kids all ended up at, you know, the top tier schools, a lot of the Empire kids. And then the word spread quickly, and within a year, we had our first tryout, if you will. And I remember, like it was yesterday, it was this mass confusion. You know, 50, 60, 70 families waiting in line to do the registration. And, you know, very quickly, I became an administrator rather than a coach, which is not what I wanted to do, number one. And number two, it took away from my time actually coaching my son, which is what I enjoyed most. And then ultimately, you know, at some point I decided, as my kids got older and were being recruited heavily, I wanted to be at all their games. And when they got to college, I wanted to support them as much as I could. And so I effectively downsized. And, you know, left a lot of money on the table, as I have over the years, because to the extent that we're unique, the thing that makes us so unique, besides the fact that we've been around a long time, is we typically only carry one team on the circuit, and in some cases two, right? And it's only one age group, you know, the varsity players who are looking to get recruited during their, you know, peak years of performance in high school. And that is what makes us unique. Again, choosing not to try and monetize it, which, by the way, God bless those that do. And I know some guys that run very, very big programs and earn a good living, and God bless them. You know, I work in finance. I've been doing it for over 20 years, and very much believe in, you know, the capitalist structure. Provide a good product, and ultimately people will seek you out. But in our case, you know, we're kind of the anti-club, if you will. We don't have tryouts. Our tryouts are done by video, where kids submit them to me and or to Kevin and or Mark. And a good number of the kids that end up with us are referrals from other families that had a great experience with us. So that, in a nutshell, I think is what makes us unique. I've stuck to that over the years. And, you know, I've had many, many people say, you know, why don't you build it out? Why don't you have, you know, different teams and age groups? It doesn't appeal to me. I think what both Kevin and Mark will allude to is the beauty of this is, you know, we really do get to know the kids on our team. Not saying that other club guys don't, but when you effectively only have, you know, in total, we do get to know them personally, and the families do rely upon us for information and advice to some extent, because we do get to know them probably at a much more granular level that other programs may not be able to do, because they're, you know, running multiple teams. So that in a nutshell, I think, is what makes us unique. And it and has allowed us to stay on the circuit when, as you well know, Terry, probably 30, 40 club teams have come and gone over the last 10 or 15 years. So,
Kevin, what's your background and how'd you get involved in Sting?
Hey, Terry, thank you. Yeah, my background, you know, it's funny you say that, stems from playing against Long Island Sting, right? When I was in high school, club, you know, and they were the best, and they still are. And I played, I ended up going to Lehigh University. Unfortunately, I was a little injured there and decided to make the, you know, go west, because in my opinion, there was the gold rush, because I wanted to coach. There wasn't much out on the West Coast. So I joined that. You know, there's some other clubs already established, and I created my own club, age 26, 27, called Club Pacific. But through that, I got connected with West Coast players, you know, and hearing different stories, honestly, about these players, you know, and their struggles. And I wanted to make Club Pacific my own personal club out here on the West Coast. Amazing, obviously, with, you know, with the name. But it was about, how can I get these kids and these parents to get recruited? Because there's no Division One, you know, what's the term, you know, west of the Mississippi, right? Denver's the closest Division One program out here. And these parents, you know, they have to pay all this money to travel back. And I was like, okay, I can't bring a whole team back, but I connected with Ken through, you know, multiple players and families that have already been recruited because they played for Sting. And, you know, once I kind of built up some, you know, I would say just individual personalized relationships with these families, you know, I was there to help these families through Sting, you know, and what Sting provides is, you know, basically an opportunity to have a coach on the West Coast through training, through personalized club, but also an established program. Because I've seen multiple clubs, coaches like me come in and out. And I wanted to have a foundation for these parents and these kids' futures. You know, that's really what's important. And that's what kind of Sting provides.
And Mark, a similar question to you, but from the standpoint of kind of the recruiting development as well. I mean, Kevin obviously tells a very linear story between trying to create like a bi-coastal opportunity to serve an underserved community. What's your outlook on the method, whether it be video tryouts or creating a more national roster or focusing exclusively on the age group that is going through the active recruiting window, that made this opportunity appeal to you?
I think the direct answer would be, it's really hard right now to separate the wheat from the chaff. Like Ken talked about, the oversaturation of those who are looking to get recruited and then having to do the correct research on where you can actually get recruited and what teams you can actually play for. My story goes back to when Ken had those three teams, and now it is one or two. And I like the idea inside of that, as Kevin brought up, it's an established program. It's a known presence. The competition is better. Terry, I come from Northern New Jersey. I didn't have a varsity program in Mahwah, New Jersey when I was a freshman. So the fields were filled with drop passes and goalies with shin guards. And it was very controlled and slowed down. So driving through Manhattan and out to Long Island 2.5 hours for practice, it was worth it, because I could tell that Ken was running something that was unique, specific to him. He was straightforward and frank all the time, and he still is. And I think that's something that many of the club programs today are lacking, is the honesty of of what it's going to take and what's going to go into it. And I'm fortunate enough to have had that personal connection, that granular level that Ken was alluding to before, and then build upon it with his work through Everest. I've been a family inside of that to help get recruited, to figure out what is the right direction to go and what do I have to do. And I've been lucky enough to affiliate my Peak Performance business so that we could be waves crashing into one another for these families and actually get them to the right place. So I think the idea of running one or two teams is necessary with the overall goal, which is to get recruited. It's not to make money or whether it's even indirectly, Terry, give a false sense of security in the recruiting process. Like I said, and I'll reemphasize, it's a very straightforward, frank, understood route once you join the Sting. There's a I believe that's the reason why it's been around for 27 seasons, because you know what you're going to get.
You mentioned Everest and Peak Performance. Can you elaborate on what those are?
Yes. So after going off to Yale, which Ken really helped in the recruiting process to get there, I graduated, went to Wall Street for 2 years, and then ever since, I've taken the entrepreneur route, and for the last 4 years, I've run Marco Cini Peak Performance, which is a holistic approach to health and performance, whether it's strength and conditioning, nutrition, and then mental performance. And I've affiliated with Ken through Everest as well to make sure that the families that come through Sting are well taken care of, and they know what it's going to take from Ken's perspective to become recruited. And being one of his players well over a decade ago, I know what it takes, and it's just been a true, really awesome relationship that we have, because we're able to work together in a way, like I mentioned in my last answer, with a personal connection with these families to make sure they are well equipped to handle the recruiting process. Because the things that go into the recruiting process, information is not enough. Being motivated is not enough. There's actual details that need to be executed, like strength and conditioning, like staying on top of the necessary variables to get recruited. So I've been fortunate enough to have a great relationship with Ken for a very long time, in which we work side by side to make sure that these families and the student athletes have everything necessary to get recruited. And I work specifically with many Sting families and players over the years now to make sure that they are ready when they take the field to perform in high-pressure situations like these recruiting tournaments.
And Kevin, I've had an opportunity to see you coach a lot over the last 5 years. Sting have played in Inside Lacrosse events. I've seen Sting at other non-Inside Lacrosse events as well. You know, I've seen some of the Southern California players that I'm sure that, you know, are there because of your relationship come and flourish and get opportunities as a result. But one of the elements of the nature of this structure is I would imagine that a lot of the burden falls on the coach to try to facilitate chemistry among players who don't have a ton of experience playing together. How do you see that, and how do you guys work to facilitate that?
I appreciate that. You know, you see me at the Inside Lacrosse Community Academy, which, you know, we're there for, and it's about building a family quickly, right? So, you know, the way we structure it and the way we do things is, you know, we understand there's a national landscape, but what we try to do and what the main focus is on bringing kids together. And that's was the whole goal by me joining Sting, is that we have a home, but you also have me as your coach. And then when we get there, you know, we got, you know, Coach Kim Miller is established with Sting, and he knows what we're doing to help these players. Then we have Mark helping coach, you know, his performance, you know, business as well. And we kind of basically, we just kind of unite and keep this, you know, plan of, hey, we keep it small. We're not trying to, you know, we're not trying to go overboard. And the beauty of it is seeing these kids go to college, yeah, all that stuff. But the most important thing is we only have one, two teams. And when I bring these kids out from the West Coast, you know, they make relationships with the East Coast kids and it starts to build. So it's not just a bunch of random kids. It's about building a family quickly, you know, at some tournaments. But really what it is the development and understanding, because we take our time to talk, video conference, all this stuff. And then with Everest Recruiting, you know, these parents build a relationship with myself, Coach Miller, or, you know, who's leading all this, Mark, you know, and it's a pretty unique opportunity. So I really think the main thing of all this is, you know, just the connection, you know, without, you know, being, you know, we want to help kids from everywhere or whoever needs, you know, the direction.
Hey, Terry, can I interject here for a second?
Yeah, of course.
Relative to that question. So, you know, Kevin brings up a good point about trying to get these people together as a family. And, you know, it's not that complicated. You know, parents often ask me, how many practices do you have? I say, maybe at best we'll have a practice before the tournament, one day before. It isn't that complicated. Most of the kids that come to us get it. They're motivated, they're dedicated, and they want to get recruited. And you take, just for example, last year we had 8 Canadian kids on our roster. They didn't know any of our players. Most of our players from the U.S. didn't know each other. But it works. It's not that complicated. If you treat the kids with respect and give the parents the information I think they need to process what the potential outcome might be, the kids get it. Could we potentially win 4 or 5 more games if we had regular practices? Maybe, but, you know, it isn't about the Sting trying to build the brand. It isn't about, I don't even have a social media account. I'm sure I'm probably the only club team that doesn't have Facebook or Twitter, but it doesn't matter to me because the kids get it. It works. Kevin's a great coach. Mark's a great motivator. And, you know, we have another coach, Chuck Alexander, whose son Dominique plays in the PLL. Chuck's a no-nonsense guy. And the kids perform on the field or they're not going to get the playing time. There's no politics involved. I don't care where the kids are from or who their parents are. And I think kudos to Kevin, because if you watch him coach, which you alluded to, he's 120% into it, Ann. Always, always. So it's a simple formula. And again, it works effectively year in, year out. Kevin, sorry for interrupting you.
No, I just, my biggest thing is with, you know, with all this and the question is where I'm coming from is I I notice that the parents and the kids out here on the West Coast, they don't, you know, they don't have that established, right? The formula, you know, like, you know, I've been coaching here for a while. It's like stuff comes and goes. Coaches come and go. You know, the programs come and go. And like what it's all about for me is that how can I help this game grow? How can I help these families understand the process? And how can I be there to make it worth their while to get where they want to go? Because at the end of the day, what we believe in, it's all about the kids. Simple as that. You know, it's all about the kids and their futures. And that's what, you know, we believe in. So that's kind of the goal of all this.
Yeah, Terry, one other thing I wanted to mention is, you know, one of the questions that I'm always hit with, and I'm sure Mark gets it and Kevin does as well, you know, a family will say to me, well, do you think my son's a Division I player? And my response is, well, first of all, I'm not the arbiter of talent. I'm not the college coach at whatever school your son aspires to. And, you know, I don't, parents sometimes get taken back and they'll say, well, look, you played Division One, your coaches played Division One. A lot of your kids have ended up at the top programs. Can't you tell me you think my son's Division One? I said, I'm not going to go out there. Your son is a Division One recruit if he gets recruited by Division One schools. So I think the foundation that, you know, Mark, Kevin, and I all aspire to is that be honest with the families. And I'll be the first to tell them, look, be careful what you wish for. Because, Terry, as you well know, Division One is a job. It's a tremendous commitment, which is a good one, by the way. But, you know, I'll tell the families who have sons that are, you know, upper tier academics, say, look, you should be looking at the NESCAC conference. You should look at Washington and Lee, right? Don't only focus on the upper tier Division One schools, because the likelihood of your son ending up there is de minimis. And I think ultimately the parents do appreciate the fact that I'm willing to kind of say, look, you got to look at this from the standpoint of getting the best education possible. For me, that's all this is about. Using lacrosse to get the best education possible and find the school where you're going to thrive rather than just survive, right?
Ken, you brought up a point a couple minutes ago that I want to revisit. You mentioned the word brand. And one of the things that I'm curious about is that your club is called the Long Island Sting, as opposed to just the Sting, which is interesting from the standpoint of the fact that you have players from, as you mentioned, all over the country and last year, Canada, and probably increasingly so. Why have you stuck with that name?
Probably because I don't pay enough attention to it. I mean, it doesn't really matter to me, quite frankly. And I know it's not the answer you're looking for. But, you know, Kevin was the first one to tell me, look, you got to call it Sting National, because we are a true national team. But I don't know that makes that much of a difference, right? I know a lot of these other clubs have these satellites, and the club brand is out there, and it's done very well through social media. And but I just don't really care, because I'm not trying to monetize it. I don't think anyone's not going to come to us because it says Long Island Sting versus Sting National.
The reason I asked the question is because there are parts of the country that are associated with playing high-level lacrosse more than others, right? And, you know, whether it was Long Island Sting or Baltimore Sting or Syracuse Sting, there's probably an appeal to be a part of a national, to be a player from an outlying part of the country to play for, you know, a club that is named after a part of the country that is reputedly very good at the sport.
You're right.
Just didn't know if that was part of the calculus.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. In the back of my mind, I think it makes sense to have Long Island, the imprimatur, because it does draw some families in, possibly who want to be associated with a team that's from the hotbed area. But I just don't have a grand design relative to the name and the social media component that might raise our profile, if that's the answer to the question that you were looking for.
If I can interject real quick, Kevin here. The big thing is that people sell, right, on social media, the media, and I'm out here on the West Coast. So the point being is that, especially as the lacrosse moves out of the hotbeds, they don't know, really. It's like, who's got the best media talent? Who's got the best website? These parents don't know. And, you know, what we're talking about, as Ken mentioned, like, we care about the right things. We don't care about, you know, the things that won't help a kid get recruited. I don't know. And the fact that it's like, who cares about some of this stuff? You know, the brand is established, and what we're trying to do is establish. So, you know, that's what's most important. And I'm on the West Coast, obviously. So that's what I've really noticed, the difference, you know, but it doesn't matter what your social media is like, you know, that's something that it's really big for us, you know, for me at least.
It's a nice segue into the question that I have for you, Kevin, and Mark. I'm interested in your thought on this as well. And it's basically just the notion of, so one of the things I find really interesting about your approach is evaluation by video. It's something that Inside Lacrosse has invested heavily in over the last 2 years. It's something that college coaches were required to make a ton of decisions on in the year 2020. And I think it informed a lot of habits that will persist into the future. And I think that essentially, it's a evolving technique because the availability of video has changed. The balance between streaming and watching on demand has changed. The quality of the video has changed. So my question is about, it's twofold. How do you distinguish evaluating somebody when you're watching them on video? And this is to you, Mark, to start, versus watching them live. And then, Kevin, I'll come back to you with the follow-up.
I can't answer a question without using performance psychology, so I'm going to go there. There's a rule of communication called 7-38-55 rule. 7% is the word choice, 38% is your tonality or inflection in your voice, and 55% is your body language. And that means over half of your communication is your posture and your body language. So when you watch film, you're getting more than half the pie. And I can see the presence. Sometimes it's harder to notice speed because it's relative to, say, a midfielder's clearing and the attackman is just very slow. It's very hard to see that. So that's where the metrics of a broad jump, a vertical jump, and numbers in the weight room could come into play as metrics that would be great for recruiting measurements, the ones that matter. But you brought up the video, and you can tell a lot by a posture and a presence, a stance, right? A defender's posture. Does the attackman always have his hands up and ready to catch and snap one off? Is he in a ready position? The triple threat, they always talk about the triple threat position of basketball, but there's one for lacrosse too. And you can just see a person's demeanor, how they carry themselves. There's a charisma, there's an energy, there's a pace in which they move up. And there's certainly that posture, and you can notice that on video. So I think there's a lot that can come from it. Just like the same way you don't have nonverbal cues when we do these phone calls rather than video, it really matters to see the presence of an athlete. So I think there's a lot more that you can take from video than people imagine.
Kevin, you mentioned the superfluous, potentially non-valuable nature of brand development around club, right? The idea is that it attracts people, and probably in most clubs' case, the most talented people, to the club. How does Sting balance the fact that you kind of don't really need the best players? If you're mission-focused, meaning that you're trying to help kids find the best opportunity to play at the next level, there's a certain tier of player that almost doesn't need any help because they are so talented. The coaches are going to find them. So I suppose to an extent, you're kind of serving that next tier of player, and you want to build the most competitive and the best experience for the participants possible. But at the same time, you're also kind of only taking who comes to you. How do you balance it? What is the chemical formula to building a roster on an event by event basis?
That's a good question. For me, and what it is the reason why Sting was so interesting to me, being on the West Coast in California, right? You know, it's word of mouth. It's established, right? We only want the right type of kids, the right type of family. And we are obviously, you know, open to anybody that wants to join us. But the thing is, it's like, you know, hey, this player comes to us and they had a great experience. And what do? They tell their friend, they tell the other family. Oh my. And then, you know, for example, like someone like Carson Cool at Yale, right? He went to Westlake High School, you know, his family, you know, loves us. And he told all the other families, right? So it's about that, like, personal touch, where we believe in that the kid has a great experience, they're going to, you know, tell other people that, hey, this was awesome. And then obviously the example of what the main goal is for a person, like a family and a kid, is, you know, hey, I got recruited because of this, you know? So it's kind of, it's still unique. Maybe it sounds archaic to some people, but, you know, I think the fact that great coaching, great experience, obviously Mark's on the phone, you know, and plays in pro level and many others that, you know, come and join us coaching, you know, we got that, you know, kind of unique difference. And I think that's really what separates us. And, you know, at the end of the day, just being able to communicate to parents. We don't have 10 teams. We don't have the youth program. We are available, you know, to help you, guide you, and, you know, do what we can, you know, personally.
Hey, Terry, can I expound on that? Sorry, Kevin, can I expound on that for a second, Terry?
Of course.
Yeah, so what comes into play here, you know, we're plug and play. So we do get every single kid on my team, on our team, plays for another club team. So we do get the superstars who are with other club teams but may want to do a particular event with us because their club isn't doing it. And again, that's also part of the structure, which affords the families flexibility. So, however, to your point, you know, do we get a lot of kids who aren't necessarily the superstar in their region? Of course. And as Mark alluded to, you can gain a lot by watching video, and I watch a ton for all the kids that send us requests to be part of this thing. And some of those kids come from regions still where they don't have the opportunity to be affiliated with a brand name club. Or the other thing is, too, the parents don't want to shell out $4,000 or $5,000 in terms of the club fees. So, you know, our fees are very, very low. And what it comes down to, Terry, is that it works, right? Could it be retooled and refined? Probably, but, you know, I have a regular job. Mark has his business. Kevin has his coaching business, and he coaches high school team in L.A. But when all is said and done, I designed this thing for the parents, for the kids, affording them flexibility. And the one thing I tell the parents is I'm not going to guarantee you that so-and-so coach is going to necessarily recruit you because you're on the sting. I'm not going to guarantee you that so-and-so coach is going to be on the sidelines. What I can guarantee you is that you're going to get exposure at the highest levels. And as you know, we do both of your events because we think they're great events. And we tell the kids, look at the number of coaches that showed up. So could it be retooled? You know, could we try and search out the, you know, have a team full of superstars? Probably. But, you know, at what end, right? So we're kind of giving that kid who might not be considered the superstar an opportunity to, you know, shine on the field where he may not have had that opportunity in his region.
And Ken, I think that's a nice transition to kind of bring this in for a landing with respect to incorporating Everest. And I know that we aren't going to give away the secret sauce primarily because we don't have time and because it's so individualized on a person-to-person basis. But, you know, my opinion of how an individual goes about getting recruited at the type of program that can be very selective, and not all of them are, is that it's a funnel that starts with a pretty broad approach of identifying athletically, can that athlete compete at our level? And then everybody that clears that bar gets moved into the next ring of the funnel, which is he a good enough lacrosse player? And then when you clear that bar, the questions of can he, you know, is it a fit financially? Is it a fit academically? Is it a fit socially for him? And then once you clear that bar, then it's, is this individual a fit for us? Are they going to fit our culture? Do you agree with that? And if so, how do you guys help facilitate an individual moving through that process?
Yeah, I absolutely unequivocally agree with what you just said. And I refer to it as a Rubik's Cube. The recruiting process is extraordinarily vague, confusing, and there is a blueprint. And just anecdotally, my oldest daughter, who was an All-American in high school, was heavily recruited. And when she was going through it, I was having my head spun around. I had no sense what I was supposed to do, who I was supposed to speak to, who I was supposed to listen to. And my wife and I chose to hire an educational consultant in New York City who had a pretty interesting roster of female athletes that ended up playing college sports. And I can tell you that when I finally met her and she said to my wife and I, "Mr. and Mrs. Miller, why don't you guys go have lunch? Your daughter and I got this." And I remember like it was yesterday. It was the first time I thought I could exhale. And there was someone who really was going to take my daughter's hand, care about her enough to give her all the information that she needed, not me, that my daughter needed to make a decision about all the schools that are recruiting her. And I came away from that meeting thinking, man, that's a value add if I ever saw one. So I think the distinction here is to be made between me monetizing this thing versus me, Mark, and Kevin adding value for the families who really aspire to get their son at the right school. And so the families that rely upon us through Everest Consulting are going to get a white glove, hands-on approach to the process, identifying the appropriate schools first based on the student athlete's academic resume, and be there for him 24/7. Because, look, in my mind, you know this as well as I do. But families who throw $5,000, $6,000, $7,000 at this in the summer with travel, with hotels, with food, and tournament fees and the like, and oftentimes at the end of it, they're like, you know, what the hell did I get from this? I don't want that to be the case when the families work with Mark, Kevin, and I. We give them a blueprint. We're brutally honest about what their alternatives are. And I always stress to the families, it's about the education. It's not about you wanting to play lacrosse in this particular program. It's about getting the best education. If you want to be a mechanical engineer, if you have an interest in computer science, if you want to go liberal arts versus a direct program that has an economics opportunity for the kids. That is really how this thing should be treated in my mind. Because the end result is that, you know, I don't necessarily always enjoy saying this, but I tell the kids, look, when you get to college, you're probably not seeing the field the first 2 years, except that. And you probably will get playing time your junior season and have a great experience, hopefully with a great coach that'll mentor you, but you damn well better like the school that you're at, right? That's the key ingredient that we all try to impart to the parents that, and the player as well. Think this process through. Don't make it about lacrosse. Make it about the education. And, you know, I'm proud to say, if you look at our commit list in terms of, you know, where our kids have ended up, I mean, we had 6 kids on the Yale National Championship team. 6. I mean, that's amazing. We had 8 or 9 players in the Ivies pre-COVID. Tremendous number of kids in NESCAC, Amherst, Middlebury, Bates, Colby, Bowdoin. We had 5 kids on Washington and Lee roster pre-COVID. And again, that was, I think, because we all tried to stress to them, get the best education. Everyone wants to go to Yale or, you know, UNC or Duke or or Princeton and or Notre Dame and play for these great coaches. But it's really the only the upper 1% of the gene pool that ends up there, right? So be realistic how you're going to spend your time, your focus, and your money. Because more and more, as you well know, there's a tremendous number of kids out there that are damn good. And it's only getting more competitive. So you better understand what you're going to be getting into. You better have a roadmap and you better be systematic about it. You know, otherwise the kids fall into a black hole, right? So.
Mark, the final word, what's this summer got in store? And are you going to be giving out awards for whichever player on each team accumulates the most glicks?
Or the kid that has the lowest body fat, actually, in Mark's case.
Well, I'll tell you, Terry, I've been sitting here wanting to say where I go for results when I want to know what's going on in the lacrosse world, it's inside lacrosse. When I want the truth of lacrosse landscape, I go to a Terry Ford article. And going off of what Ken said about the recruiting process being vague and confusing and no blueprint, you go to Everest, you go to Sting, and you hopefully go to Marco Cini Peak Performance when you're looking for the truth. Because what Ken said about the results, you know, and him not being the arbiter of talent is true. But we definitely do everything necessary to increase the probability and get very close to the certainty of those outcomes. And the student comes first, the person comes first. And I loved your funnel analogy. Then it's the athlete and the lacrosse player. And then they're recruit third. And staying at Everest and does a really good job of making sure those things are squared away to make sure at the end of the day, whether they're jumping in front of a shot or winning a game for Sting by any means necessary, there's a reason for it, and that's to play at the next level.
Well, Ken, Kevin, Mark, really appreciate your time on the Inside the Cross podcast. Wish we had more, but those looking for more can find Everest Peak Performance, and we'll be following up with the Sting throughout the summer. So appreciate your listening, and we'll be back later in the week with more Inside the Cross podcast.
Thanks, Terry. Have a good one, man.
Inside the Cross podcast. The source of the sport.